Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris, equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and we're joined today once again by Frank Nothaft, chief economist for Freddie Mac. Frank, welcome back to our show.
Well, thanks for having me again, Bruce.
You bet. I wanted to get some of the nuts and bolts out of the way. A lot of people may be confused about who sets the maximum loan amount for Freddie Mac, first of all.
Oh, that's a great question. It's an easy question, but it's a complex answer. Basically, it's Freddie Mac that sets the loan limit. However, since we have a regulator, our regulator also determines what it believes to be the correct loan limit for us. And so what we have been doing is following suit and following what our regulator determines that loan limit to be. Now, our regulator has one of those long, Washington Inside the Beltway acronyms. It's OFAO, for the Office of Federal Housing Enterprise Oversight, and they look at a government survey on house price trends, and that's what they use to determine what our loan limit should be.
Is it usually a certain percentage of the national median, or is it? I know that their index takes into consideration. It's different than the Case-Shiller index, and it is different than the National Association median. But is it a percentage of what they view as the overall price for the nation or a specific area?
I wish it were that simple. The way it actually works, it's based on a survey that determines what the average purchase price was for a home purchased and financed with a conventional mortgage.
Okay.
And then you compute what the October to October change was in that average price. So it's not even an annual survey. It's a survey for transactions that were financed with conventional loans in October, and this is by congressional statute because Congress, in its infinite wisdom, determined that that was the way to do it. And so what the statute says is that you compute it in October, you compare it to the previous October in terms of what the average price was, and then you compute the percentage increase, and that's how much that's the percentage increase then that's applied to determine Freddie Mac's loan limit.
So, interesting that it's always an assumption that there's an increase. Let's say October to October this time we'll have a decrease. Does that mean that the maximum loan balance would be changed downward?
Again, another excellent question. The way the statute reads, it reads in terms of increases. So did Congress just not foresee a decrease occurring, or did Congress never intend for it to decline and only intended for it to stay stable or increase? These are absolutely fascinating questions for legal scholars and scholars of, congressional legislative history.
Okay.
And so, and that's why the last time this measure of average prices declined, because it has declined in the past, and the last time it declined was between October of 1992 and October of 1994. So it declined for two consecutive years. And what happened was that at that time, Freddie Mac kept its loan limit unchanged for 93, 94, 95. So we had an unchanged loan limit. And that's a reason why our loan limit this year for 2007 has remained at $417,000 for one-family homes, the same as what it was in 2006, because the average price in this survey, it actually declined a little bit, and our regulator determined to keep the loan limit unchanged for this one year.
In California, our median price is about $560, and so a $417 loan is about a little under 80% of the median price of California. Is that Freddie Mac's intention, is to be in the safest arena of loans?
It's, I guess, congressional intent.
Okay.
You know, our desire is to serve the market as best we can, and to make mortgages affordable, to assure a stable supply of credit flowing to the consumer and to our lending partners, and to assure that mortgages remain kind of as liquid as possible, meaning that a lender can sell the loan quickly at a very good price in order to replenish their funds and turn around and make new loans. And that's what Congress has written into our charter, to make sure that loans are affordable, that they're liquid, and that there's a stable supply of credit flowing into lenders so that consumers can have access to credit. So Congress put in a loan limit that for the 48 contiguous states is uniform, and for a one-family home, that loan limit is $417,000. And they didn't take into account the fact that in California, house prices can be a lot higher than they are in Iowa or some other place in the country. And so it does lead to certain inequities, because since house prices are so much higher in California, we're not really able to, serve the middle-income segment of the market as well as we can in places where house prices are a lot lower, such as in the Farm Belt in the middle section of the country.
Okay. Most indexes, whether it be Case-Shiller or OFHEO or probably even National Association of Realtors, will show a price decline in 07. That'll start allowing affordability to grow eventually. Will that increased affordability put us back into a real estate market that's healthy, and how long do you think that might take?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head, Bruce, because it's, to me, it's housing affordability that really drives new construction and home purchase activity by your average family. And when housing becomes unaffordable, either because mortgage rates have shot up to sky-high levels or because house prices have escalated a lot, then that's going to lead to a so-called correction in the housing market, where values decline and home sales fall. And that's what we've seen in parts of the country, especially in California, especially in the southern half of California. Because as you know, house prices really shot up. They doubled in less than 5 years in some neighborhoods in Southern California. And that really caused an affordability crisis, because it got to be so difficult for the starting family, the first-time home buyer, to afford to buy a home. And typically, the first-time home buyer accounts for one-third of homes that are being purchased.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard for a family, a first-time home buyer, to come up with the funds for down payment, for closing costs, when house prices have doubled in just 5 years, and their salaries haven't doubled. So it's a real issue. And so some of the correction in house prices will help to improve affordability over time.
When you have price increases and real estate's working for everyone, and you also end up having that affordability crisis, is that when lending policies sort of step in, and then that begets looser and looser lending policies that tries to get more and more people into the business of owning a home?
Well, sadly, that seems to be a cycle that we do see time and time again. And it's a cycle where there's perhaps an erosion of credit standards. I think it's fine to see the introduction of loan products that try to make home ownership and loans more affordable for the typical consumer. But if that then is accompanied by weaker underwriting standards, that's ultimately just inviting trouble down the road when market conditions do change, like we've seen over the last 18 months. And the change in market conditions is the fact that house prices are flat or down in lots of markets, especially, say, in the Southern California area, house prices are down in the last year. And when you have that coupled with a situation where lenders were really competing aggressively and stretching to try to meet the needs of consumers and doing basically no down payment lending, such as the 80-20, mm-hmm. Lending product. Well, in that situation, the home buyer basically had no equity at stake in the home, and then if house prices fall 5% or whatever, then the homeowner has actually the opposite of equity. They have negative equity.
Sure.
And that's what invites problems in loan performance. Invites almost delinquency when then something unsuspected befalls the consumer and they have difficulty meeting the payments.
On November 15th, 2006, you were interviewed, and just quoting you saying that you thought the housing market activity had probably bottomed out and would return to a more normal level. Has that occurred, and if not, what's preventing it?
Well, I tell you, one thing that we've learned over the last 6 months is the scale of the problems in the subprime industry, which we weren't, we didn't know about how problematic the underwriting had become in the subprime sector 6 months ago.
And that's basically because you weren't buying that paper, is that correct?
We weren't directly buying subprime loans and putting subprime loans in our portfolio.
Okay.
The loans we buy directly are prime loans. Prime loan, conventional loans made to prime borrowers. We only invested a little bit in the AAA rated securities, mortgage-backed securities that had subprime loans in them, but we otherwise did not purchase directly any subprime loans at all.
Okay.
So to us, this complete erosion of the underwriting quality of subprime loans during the course of 2006 really has become much clearer in the past 6 months. And with that has, I think, worked to delay the recovery and push the trough further out. So 6 months ago, we were thinking in terms of the trough hitting here in the first half of 2007, and with the recovery clearly underway in the second half of 2007. Well, now we've pushed back our views another 6 months because of these problems in the subprime sector. So now our view is that we're not at the trough yet, and in fact, we've got a number of rocky months still ahead of us, but we will hit that trough in the second half of the year, perhaps the fourth quarter of the year, and then as we start 2008, we'll see some clear signs of a national recovery in the housing market.
Now, when you say recovery, are we talking about activity and volume of sales, but not necessarily price increases?
Oh, that's right. It's more in terms of home sales and new construction, not necessarily house prices. Our forecast for house prices, again, house prices pretty close to stagnant in 2007 and 2008 nationwide. Maybe just a tiny bit of increase looking at national statistics, but not much really to speak of at all. And so what that means, if that's the case nationwide, that means there's a whole lot of markets across the country that are going to experience declines.
Yes. There's a great quote I ran across. It says, it may sometimes be expedient for a man to heat a stove with his own furniture, but he should not delude himself by believing he has discovered a wonderful new method of heating his home. Have we been heating our economy with our own furniture by borrowing money from our homes, and will that someday soon come to an end?
Well, we've still seen relatively strong levels of cash out activity, home equity cash out, converting that into cash through placing a mortgage loan. It's weakened relative to the volumes we saw in 2005 and 2006. But one thing to keep in mind is that there are still families who have been homeowners for a number of years, 5, 10 years or longer, and they've really enjoyed a substantial level of wealth creation through the run-up in home prices, home values. So they actually have still a substantial cushion in terms of how much home equity wealth they have. And for them, it may make a lot of sense to convert some of that home equity out in terms of cash and use it for other purposes. And one of the purposes is actually plowing the money right back into the home in terms of a home improvement, an addition, an alteration to the home. And what's important about that is that that helps to enhance the value of the collateral.
That's true. In California, let's talk about foreclosures. The number of foreclosures have exploded just in the last year, and it's particularly it's really picking up in the last quarter. We had a record number of notices of default, which is the first sign of foreclosure in California. In 97, per quarter, we averaged 32,000 notices of default, and we got back to that number last quarter for the first time since 97. Do you view that as a sign that California is probably going to have a big problem with prices maybe coming down? And do you feel that foreclosures will likely continue in California?
Well, the foreclosures will continue. And one of the issues is the fact that values in some neighborhoods, especially in Southern California, have come down. And many of the homes that were purchased in 05 and 06 were purchased with no down payment, basically, because of the 80-20 structure.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly creates an environment where some families will be challenged to make the payments, and defaults may occur. One thing that I would urge any consumer who's in that situation, who's experiencing challenges meeting their payments, have fallen into delinquency on their mortgage loan, is to really make sure they speak with the loan servicer. In fact, the loan servicer is probably contacting them if they've been delinquent on one or two payments, and the consumer often feels guilty and under pressure because of the financial challenges, and doesn't know who to reach out for, and suddenly they get a message from the servicer, and they start getting uncomfortable and don't want to return the call because they think it's bad news. They should really make sure they return that call and reach out to the servicer, because it's not in the servicer's interest to go through a foreclosure process. In fact, everybody loses in a foreclosure process. Of the consumer obviously loses, but there's substantial costs the servicer entails through going through foreclosure, and the investor in the loan loses as well. So it's really in everybody's interest to talk and see if there's some type of loan modification, some type of loan workout that can be arranged that can assist the family through this challenging period that they're going through.
Do you have a sense of what percentage, once the foreclosure process has started, what percentage of those ultimately get to the courthouse steps and the home is lost?
Yes, we did some analysis on for prime conventional loans that went through that process here at Freddie Mac, and because we have a very active loan modification program where we try to work with servicers, who try to work with consumers to help them through this, what our experience has been is that approximately one quarter of the loans that start foreclosure go through to REO. That is, they go through through the entire foreclosure procedure. But three quarters of them ultimately are cured in some fashion, and that's a lot better than what you see in the subprime market. In the subprime market, half the loans that start foreclosure, boom, bingo, they go into REO.
That's correct.
And the reason our statistics are much lower is because we are much more active in trying to work with the servicer, work with the consumer to see if we can assist them get through their this temporary period of financial difficulty. And what we will do is use our retained portfolio in order to assist this workout process, because we will pull, technically what we do is in a case like this is we pull the loan out of the pool that we have issued, and while we're going through the workout process, we will hold that loan in our portfolio. And that's really what helps enable us to be much more proactive, than in the case of the subprime lender.
Okay. We've got about 5 minutes left, and what I'd like to do is look at the future of real estate. I'm going to mention several categories or events that can affect the future of the housing market, and I'd like to have you give each one a score between 10 being most important and 1 being of little importance. Okay?
Okay, sure.
Okay,
let me just polish off my crystal ball here.
Okay.
Start. Okay.
Okay. Job losses instead of gains. 10 being most important, 1 being of little importance.
I find job losses to be very important, so let me give that a 9.
Okay.
Because when we, over and over again, what we see is that a healthy local economy is really important for a healthy housing market. And a healthy local economy means job growth, job gains. If that's happening, that'll help to sustain housing activity.
Prices declining instead of gaining.
I'd say I'd give that an 8, and that's again very important because price declines often are what leads to foreclosures.
Okay.
But again, you need a trigger event, and you need a trigger event that causes delinquency before you get to foreclosure.
Okay. Well, let's back up then. We in California, we have had some sort of trigger event. It may not be the normal one, but we're already at a record number of defaults. So is that trigger different this time? Because we're already there with low unemployment.
Well, when I look at the statistics for California, the default rate is actually still lower than what it has been in previous cycles. For example, in early 90s, the default rate, meaning the percent of loans in default, was higher than what it is now. One reason you're seeing what seems to be a large or record number of foreclosures is that over the last 15 years, the population and the housing stock in California has continued to grow at a rapid pace.
Okay.
So when you look at the number of defaults or number of foreclosures, yeah, okay, it seems really big. But the thing to keep in mind is that relative to all the loans outstanding in percentage terms, the default rate is still lower today than what it was in the early 1990s in California.
Okay, I've only got a couple minutes, and I'm going to – some of these don't necessarily apply directly to the real estate world, but I think they may have ramifications. What about any change in tax laws affecting interest rate deductions or capital gain rates?
I'd give that maybe a 5.
Okay.
I'd give that a 5.
All right. Anything to do with budget deficits? Do you view that as any problem for real estate in the sense that it changes interest rates at all?
I'd give that a 4.
Okay. And what about world oil prices?
Oil prices. I'll give that a 5, and I'll tell you why I give that a little bit of a higher rating than the budget deficit. If oil prices suddenly escalate further, that's going to heat up inflation.
Exactly.
In the economy, and higher levels of inflation are just going to make Chairman Bernanke at the Federal Reserve really, really nervous about inflation getting out of control. And when the Federal Reserve gets nervous about that, their reaction is to jack up interest rates. And any time interest rates go up, that's going to be bad for a housing market, for home sales, for construction, for new lending, for the mortgage market. So if oil prices really shoot up, that's probably going to be bad. And likewise, if oil prices suddenly collapse, no one's expecting that, but if they really fall, that'll probably be good because that means it's likely there'll be less inflation in the economy.
Well, Frank, we're running out of time. Thank you again so much for joining us, and I hope we can do this again sometime very soon.
Well, thanks a lot for having me today, Bruce. I'll look forward to that.
Okay. Thanks again.
Sure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.